This is the Education Gadfly Show.
You know what I was into?
What?
Smurfs.
Oh, no.
Smurfs.
Oh, yeah,
I collected a lot of Smurfs.
Yep.
Look, I dare you to find a Gen Xer guy out there who did not have a crush on Smurfette.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the American Girl Doll of the Education Reform Space, Michelle Gininger.
Thanks, Mike. This is all about Jeff Murray's post on our Ohio team. He wrote a fantastic blog post that everyone should read about some Common Core anti-takeover of America. This woman was blasting American Girl dolls. I have a special place in my heart for them. I had Samantha as a child. She's now retired, so I'm feeling old. Mike, you might be even feeling older.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I have two boys. I sort of have some sense that there is such a thing called American Girl dolls.
Right.
But and people spend a lot of money on them.
Yes.
And they come with all kinds of accoutrements.
But there's
for extra money.
It's all about, you know, teaching girls history. And so even with you having boys, you have the toys and your kindergarten canon and all these things on how to bring education and knowledge to your kids outside of school. So this is a girl version. And so
out there had historical figures.
Yeah, they're from different time periods. Samantha was
Victorian.
Mm-hmm. Molly was World War II. And it's, you know, about getting girls excited about history. So while it is a private company and they make millions and millions and millions of dollars, there's some good here.
All right, but what's the Common Core angle? There was a doll that had a textbook that was a Pearson textbook that was a Common Core textbook?
Common Core aligned, and this blogger didn't like that. And it's, you know, let's stop nitpicking.
The question is, was that textbook really Common Core aligned?
Well,
did it actually reflect the instructional? Just because, as we know, there's no way to know. They just slapped Common Core aligned on that on real textbooks. I mean, there's not much keeping them from slapping that on the fake textbooks.
Maybe we can get the G.I. Joes out there to become the Common Core Police.
Nice. Well played. Well played. As you know, there is no Common Core Police.
Well, now there can be.
Talk about that.
Didn't anyone see Toy Story? I mean, there's potential here.
By the way, if your favorite doll was Victorian, how is it that you are not watching Downton Abbey? This is crazy, Michelle. How is that?
I know.
Love this show.
I only have limited time for TV because I like to live real life, and The Good Wife is my TV show.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting choice as you prepare for marriage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Pamela, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Fordham released a new school choice toolkit this week, arguing that students who participate in voucher or tax credit programs should take state tests and the results should be published publicly. Some of our friends think this is a terrible idea. Do they have a point?
Well, you know, some of our friends in the school choice movement, and they are our friends, and let's be clear, we are huge fans of school choice, and we would like to see these programs grow. And I have to admit, speaking personally, I would rather see school choice programs without this accountability than no school choice programs at all. Okay, so we want school choice. But there is a debate within the movement about whether or not these programs should only be accountable to parents, or there should be some kind of public accountability as well. Testing, some transparency, see how the kids are doing, possibly pull the plug on giving money to schools that are not getting any results in terms of reading and math. And look, as we point out, Michelle, in our toolkit, there, you know, there, we understand there are downsides, there are trade-offs, there are risks involved. I mean, we do also worry about putting pressure on schools to be homogenized and to be less diverse educationally, but those are outweighed by some real positives, right?
By the pressure on these schools to make sure their children are performing academically, and that outweighs it. I mean, to me, accountability in choice programs wins on two levels. One, they're public dollars. We have to know that they're educating kids. We've done this. Mm-hmm. Let's just be open and see how it works. And it doesn't. There are a lot of bad private schools that receive money and they shouldn't. And that's just the hard truth. And then the other win here is that politically, to get a school choice program enacted, it needs accountability these days. I mean, there's a lot more Democrats supporting school choice, and they're only going to support it if there's accountability. So if you want new programs, if we want more kids to have these choices, it comes with the price tag of accountability.
And look, let's be clear. If you're talking about a private school that's taking a handful of kids, then that's different. And we talk about a sliding scale of accountability that says, look, you don't want to discourage the Sidwell Friends of the world from participating, taking a handful of kids. You know, those should not be subject to the same level of accountability. But you've got some places around the country where now these voucher schools are overwhelmingly serving kids on vouchers, on scholarships. Most of their funding now is coming from the public. You know, I think it's fair to say that they should demonstrate at least transparency to the public, if not some accountability around student learning. We can have debates about whether it should be the state test or other tests, the pros and cons there. But I don't think that we can pretend that the market alone is going to weed out the bad schools. I think that the market actually does a very good job at encouraging the creation of innovative and excellent schools, as we've seen in private school choice and charter schools. But it is not an effective mechanism for closing down the bad schools. Unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, some parents will choose schools that suck. And, you know, if that's not good enough when we're talking about kids' lives hanging in the balance and we're talking about, you know, the future of our country, depending on an educated population.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we created this toolkit in the first place was to sort of have the voucher movement not fall into the same pitfalls that the charter school movement did. I mean, we said, yes, let's all charter schools open. Let's have 1,000, you know, flowers bloom and et cetera. But there were a lot of bad charter schools and, you know, a lot of states we couldn't close them and blah, 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 blah. And there are all these problems. Well, let's learn lessons from our choice cousins and make sure vouchers and scholarship tax credit programs don't fall into the same problems.
Do we know if any of the American girls go to charter schools? Any homeschool?
We'll get back to you.
All right,
we can do some research.
Check into that. All right. Excellent. Okay. Topic number two.
A new survey in Education Next indicates that when people understand just how mediocre their local public schools are, they are more likely to support education reform, including school choice. Is this an argument for the higher standards of Common Core?
Yes.
Sure.
You look very enthusiastic about that. Michelle, are you getting tired of Common Core?
I'm not getting tired of Common Core. I mean, to me, this is fairly obvious. You can take any issue outside of education. And yeah, if voters know more about it, chances are they're going to, if they know more about the issues, what's working, what's not, they're going to have stronger opinions for what works. So, yes, of course.
No, but this is a big deal, Michelle. This is a big deal because what they were able to do, and I love that. Look, I am an editor at EdNext, but I love what we've been doing with these surveys. And I can take no credit for it because it's not something I work on personally. But they do all these little experiments where you ask somebody, okay, what do you think about your local school? Oh, I think my local schools are great. You know, and then, okay, well, how do you feel about these reforms? Well, you know, they come out with these results. And they say, okay, now let me give you some information about your local schools. Actually, according to, you know, national benchmarks, only half the kids are college and career ready. And suddenly the people say, huh, really? And then they say, okay, now what do you think about your schools? And they say, well, now I'm not so excited about them. Maybe I am more open to school choice. Maybe I don't think teachers should have lifetime tenure. You know, maybe I do think there should be greater accountability. So the point here is to try to bust through the complacency of most of the American public, which believes that while the system as a whole is broken, their own local schools are doing fine. We know that factually to be incorrect. Most American schools are quite mediocre, at least compared internationally. You know, and so presenting people with that information changes their views, makes them more open to reform. That's kind of a big deal.
Yes. I'm sorry. It's just like it's like the thing with Congress. I mean, everyone else's congressperson is the problem, right. But not mine. Right. I mean, clearly it is your own school. It is your own congressman. But and my congressman is retiring, by the way. I just found out. So
there you go.
Gearing up for an election.
All right. Come on.
Sorry.
I got to get Michelle. You know, Pam, we need Michelle, especially as our PR person, to spend more of her time getting the message out that people's schools suck. She's too positive for that. Is that it? Yeah. Banners. Ooh, I like that.
We'll get the interns on it.
All right. Good. Topic number three.
Last week, the administration told schools that it would apply disparate impact theory to the civil rights enforcement of school discipline rules. Is this going to help protect minority kids from discrimination or subject them to unruly schools?
Oh, man, this one, it makes me extremely nervous. OK, look, I understand the impulse. I can believe that you can find schools out there where administrators are racist or at least maybe have biases that they're not even aware of themselves. And they are suspending or expelling African-American kids or Latino kids for, you know, for bad behavior that for other kids, for white kids, maybe they wouldn't have such harsh penalties. And that's a problem, right? So that's a problem. On the other hand, the disparate impact theory issue is that what they are saying, the Department of Justice, Department of Education, they're going to look at the data. And if you are suspending or expelling, say, more African-American boys than they make up in terms of your student population, that's going to be an indication that there's discrimination going on. Never mind that it's possible that African-American boys might be misbehaving at higher rates because, for example, we know that African-American boys are much more likely to be growing up in poverty, to be growing up without fathers, to be growing up with parents, you know, fathers who are in prison, all things that are risk factors for, you know, discipline issues in schools. And as a result, schools are going to feel this pressure not to discipline kids who need to be disciplined. How is this going to be good for what happens in the classroom, Michelle?
I mean, I think this is a disaster. I mean, I agree with you that absolutely minority children are probably being expelled or disciplined at much higher rates than their white counterparts. And probably sometimes white students get away with things that, right, that African-American students don't. But we shouldn't waste our time looking at the data on this and then penalizing schools and all of this. Let's spend the time of removing unruly children from classrooms so the other children can learn, and then working with these unruly children to get a better outcome so that they can join their other students again. I mean, I just think this is dangerous, federal overreach, the whole thing. I mean,
look, you know, the data show that Asian students tend to be disciplined less than any other group. So is this going to put pressure on schools to, wait, find some Asian kid to suspend quick so we don't get the civil rights people down on our backs? I mean, this is the loot. This is what happens. OK, and they put out this guidance, and it's not just a problem that they might end up knocking on some of the doors of these schools, is that throughout the country, it's going to have this chilling effect. And I just read something today that, you know, either it's going to encourage schools to discipline almost nobody, or to get to double down on the zero tolerance insanity, where they're going to have these ridiculous rules that they are going to enforce to the letter of the law, because they're going to want to protect themselves legally to say, here are our policies and we are enforcing them with no judgment. In other words, anytime you use human judgment, it's going to be suspect. And this is the problem, Michelle, is that we have taken away so much adult authority from the schools, you know, and look, reformers do this too sometimes, is to say we're not going to trust the people in the schools to do right by kids. I don't see how at the end of the day you run a good education system or anything else if you view the people working in the system with suspicion at all times.
It's absolutely true. If you don't trust the adults in the building, what are we doing?
Yep. All right. So on that depressing note, that is all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. But don't be sad, because now it's time for everybody's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Did you have American Girl dolls when you were growing up? Or like me, are you too old to be a part
too
of that generation?
Too old. I'm the Cabbage Patch generation.
Oh, God.
You do remember Cabbage Patch?
Oh, no,
Patch,
I
right?
do. And all right, I'm going to regret admitting this on the air. But you know what? You know what I was into?
What?
Smurfs.
Oh,
no. Smurfs. I collected a lot of Smurfs.
Yep.
Look, I dare you to find a Gen Xer guy out there who did not have a crush on Smurfette.
Pamela, Joe, we've got a prank to pull. Yeah. Let's keep this one in mind.
I mean, and Cabbage Patch was the precursor to the American Girl. There would have been no American Girl without Cabbage Patch.
Is that right?
Sure. I had a Cabbage Patch before I had an American Girl.
Okay.
See?
All right. There you go. Excellent. But those were, I mean, I picture those as not being nearly as, I don't know. I mean,
they all had their own little names. Oh, you bought them their different
were
clothes.
Were they expensive? Like American Girl?
Excellent.
All right. Well, there you go. Love it. Okay, Amber, what you got for us?
Got a new study. Well, it's a couple months old, but I just saw it. From the high-profile intervention. We remember this. It was called the Talent Transfer Initiative. This was a few years ago where it was a randomized experiment study. They were giving effective teachers, like in the top 20% per value added, $20,000, remember, to transfer to disadvantaged schools.
Right. Rick always calls this strip mining teachers from the good schools and sending them to the bad schools.
So anyway, they came out with all these other little studies, but we never got the student achievement and finally got the student achievement. So 10 districts, 7 states, it was paid over 2 years, and they were expected to remain in their low-performing school during that time. Interesting, districts were able to fill 88% of the targeted vacancies with high performers, but they had to approach over 1,500 of eligible teachers to get the 81 they needed. So you can only convince like 5% to make the switch.
Wow. Even with $20,000 of extra salary per year.
Yes. No, it was 2 years. It was over 2 years. So
an extra 10K a year.
Right. Analysts found that the incentive had a positive impact on math and reading test scores in the targeted elementary schools. Up to a quarter of a standard deviation, which equates in this study to moving a student up by about 4 to 10 percentile points relative to the students in their states. So that's not too shabby. Yeah. Yet impacts varied across districts, and there were no impacts in middle school. Incentive had a positive impact on teacher retention rates during the 2 year payout period. But after that, the treatment teachers were no more or less likely to leave than their peers. So some say this study shows that effective teachers can indeed be effective in other settings, because we got the whole brouhaha, like, can you move a teacher? Is she equally effective in another context? And some people say, yes, this study shows that they are.
Yeah, that they can be. And of course, I mean, this is at the end of the day voluntary. And so teachers self-selected in. So this 5% of teachers who agreed to do it must have thought that they could be effective with higher need kids.
That's right.
So what do you take away from this from a policy perspective? I mean, there are some of our friends in the reform movement, mostly those on the left. They say, shall we call it the George Miller left? George Miller leaving Congress, finally. Perhaps long after he should have, many years ago, in my humble opinion, but that's another story. But that you know, this means we should have a federal mandate that states or districts create these kinds of incentives, or you know, force people to move teachers around in this way. I mean, or what? Local districts should do this if they want to. What's the answer?
It reminds me when I was in China. This is what they were doing. They were forcing teachers to move to other school districts. I mean, forcing them to move. Like, crazy. We are not there.
Yeah.
So, no, absolutely. Like, if you want to incentivize teachers to move, then incentivize away, you know, and maybe $20,000 isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we know work conditions, gosh, that's everything, right? I mean, golly, how much is it going to take to move in a place that maybe the work conditions aren't so great?
Yeah. So, and if districts are going to do it, I mean, they're going to need to have, obviously, the money. It helps if there's some kind of weighted student funding system, right? I mean, you need to have a lot more money going into the high need schools so that they can afford to pay their teachers more. But it also means you need to make some choices, that if that's where you're going to spend your money, you can't spend it on things like lowering class sizes.
That's right.
Right. So, I mean, maybe you can make this work, but it's got to be a trade-off. I wonder if, you know, based on the impact they were able to see, if you could argue, is this a better strategy for high need schools, let's say, than lowering
class they
size.
Did a cost analysis. I think they found out it would save them about $13,000. I can't remember the assumptions they put in for the class size numbers.
Okay.
But I remember reading that. But they, and then it comes with three other pages of caveats in terms of, because the district's impacts were so different. So it's not like a blanket statement you could make. But they did show some cost savings relative to class size reductions.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you, Amber. I love that empirical program. It actually not no findings. I mean, this is
That's
huge.
Right.
Stick that baby in the What Works Clearinghouse.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you, Amber. Thank you, Michelle. That is all the time we have for this week. Until next week.
I'm Michelle Gininger.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.